This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Family First, your step-by-step plan for creating a phenomenal family, written and read by Dr. Phil McGraw. Before we begin, please note that this audiobook also has a printed component. CD number 6 in this 6-CD set contains print files that are vital to the family-enhancing processes that Dr. Phil will detail for you here. As soon as you can, right now if you're in a position to do so, you should put CD 6 in your computer and print out these files. You can view and print these pages on your computer using Adobe Reader. If you don't have Adobe Reader, it can be downloaded for free from Adobe's website, adobe.com. Keep these printed pages handy. You'll need them as you go through the Family First program. Now, starting with a letter to all parents, here is Dr. Phil.
Dear parents, I want to talk to you about family, yours and mine. I'm writing this book as an adult child of loving but sometimes ill-equipped parents, as a current father and husband, and lastly, as a career mental health professional. It is as a fellow concerned parent that I would like to talk to you now, one-on-one. I know and feel that as parents, you and I share some very important priorities. Just like you, I love my family more than anything in this world, and I want us all to be safe, healthy, happy, and prosperous in everything we do, both within our family and as we go out into the world. It's a day-to-day challenge, but most days it seems to be going pretty well at my house. With two boys, one of them a teenager still living at home, that could have changed in the 5 minutes since I started writing this letter. I hope that you are enjoying some harmony as well. However, as parents, it is our job to be aware of everything that can even potentially impact our families. We must be particularly sensitive to those things that can threaten our peaceful and joyful existence, whether those threats come from the outside world or from within our own homes, hearts, and histories. People enter our family's world from all walks of life. Teachers, coaches, extended family, school bullies, the all-powerful peers, and others. Some are well-intentioned and some are not. These people may have priorities and values that are different from your own, and they can tremendously affect how our children think, feel, and behave now, as well as who they become as adults. Bombardment from a massive and slick media can undermine morals and values in even the strongest of families if purposeful care is not taken to control and counteract those messages. Television, music, and movies manufacture heroes and icons with an utter disregard for what is being glamorized. It is our duty as the leaders of our families to make sure we are counteracting rather than contributing to the craziness. We must make certain that we do not threaten our own families from within due to our own lack of adjustment, poor priorities, absence of leadership, or by using the negative products and techniques of our own upbringing. As parents, we are certainly not the only influences in our children's lives, so we absolutely must make sure we are the best and most persuasive influences in our children's lives. Cynics will tell you that in our fast-paced society, family is becoming obsolete, that it is just an old-fashioned lost concept getting buried in a busy world of enlightened people. I'm here to tell you that that is not right, not even close. Family is even more important today than in past generations, and its erosion is unacceptable. This is a fight we can and must win. This is a fight we will win if we just do our homework and plug in. As a parent, you have the power to set your child on a course for success. You may or may not feel powerful right now, but if you have the courage to rise to the challenge, your children can and will be blessed beyond belief. I'm here with a message of hope and optimism, because I believe that families in America, your family and mine, can thrive, survive, and in fact flourish. What's more, I believe that you specifically can assume the noble role of leading your family through this modern maze and turn up the volume on the values and beliefs that define what you want for your children and family. All you need is energy and a really good plan. As to the needed energy, you have only to look to the love in your heart to know that you have the power and energy to meet this challenge of creating an environment in which your children and your family can rise above the noise of a world that I sometimes think has gone absolutely mad. That love you have for your children and family is the necessary fuel for your efforts. Now comes the plan. The detailed step-by-step plan that you need to win this tug-of-war with the world and ensure that you have and maintain a phenomenal family. What I intend to do in Family First is to tell you with great precision what you need to stop doing and what you need to start doing to lead your family with such a pure purpose and power that the competing messages and influences are drowned out. I plan to help you define success for your specific child or children and then take the steps to create and claim it for you and yours. Your children are the stars in your crown, and it is time for them to shine. It's okay for them to shine. And if you do your job, shine they will. It is time that as parents we say, "Hey, I do not surrender. I do not give up. I will not be intimidated by all the forces tugging on my children and family. I will not accept that disconnected children are just how it is these days. I do not accept the epidemics of oral sex, drugs, and alcohol in the middle and upper schools. I do not accept a child that appears deaf when I say, 'Pick up your toys and don't hit your sister in the head anymore.' I will not continue to parent out of fear that my kids won't like me if I require more from them behaviorally, academically, and spiritually, as I teach them that relationship building is important in life. I will not feel guilty and go into debt trying to keep them in designer clothes and toys from preschool on up. I'm not charged with being their friend. I am charged with being their parent, their protector, their teacher, and their leader. I will rise above my raisin, if necessary, to break any parental legacy that may be contaminating how I lead my family and deal with my children. Give me the specific tools, guidance, and techniques, and I will work to socialize my children in a way so that they become immune to the many seductive promises of instant gratification, false realities, and provocative lifestyles of today's fast-paced world. I will not let the television or internet babysit them as I communicate only through emails, pagers, and cell phones. I will instead plug in the old-fashioned way and prepare them to deal with the distractions that assault them and blur their vision of self. I will create the pride, unity, and loyalty of team spirit that is so critical to a phenomenal family. As fellow parents, Robin and I prayed about this important challenge and made a pledge to each other, to our family, and ultimately to God a number of years ago, and I now invite you to do the same. What you are about to do, whether it is part of an effort to get your family out of the ditch and back up on the road of life, or to strengthen and protect the wonderful family you now enjoy, is to give your family the greatest advantage that you can. So buckle up and hold on as we do this together, hand in hand. P.S. Your kids just got lucky.
Chapter 1. Family Matters.
He lives in two worlds, this 12-year-old boy. Every day he troops in and out of those two worlds, in and out of the tiny paint-peeled track house he lives in with his father, mother, and three sisters. To say his is a modest neighborhood is kind. To the casual observer, the houses are indistinguishable. There's a kind of peace and order to the cookie-cutter sameness. everything in its place, and a place for everything. At least so it appears. Like every other neighborhood in America, suburbia or the inner city, every home is a facade, an outward face that betrays little of what lies inside. Sometimes what is inside is the opposite of peaceful. Behind the social masks, all too often lie families that are chaotic and disconnected, that threaten to disintegrate with the next crisis. The boy lives in just such a house and in just such an American family. Outside the doors of his home, the boy finds a world that seems immeasurably more validating. He has a small group of friends and acquaintances to whom he, in some ways, feels closer than his own family. Yet they too seem distant and different because he is different, at least in his own eyes. Among them, he, like so many others, wears a social mask of okayness. But he doesn't know theirs is a mask as well. He seems relaxed, even confident, but secretly, he's always on guard because he knows he's not like them, not really. He knows he and his family are poor and that they live differently with different problems, problems you just don't talk about. He's making one of the first and most common mistakes children make. He's comparing his private reality, his world behind the door, to the social mask of all his friends. He assumes that what he sees is the truth, and in comparison, his image of his own family situation suffers dismally. In the world beyond his home, the discovery of athletics has been an absolute godsend. He and his family don't have the money, the clothes, or the ability to participate in any of the extracurricular activities except for sports, which are free to all students. In fact, at his young age, the boy already works two jobs, and so he embraces sports as a leveling device. On the playing field, he doesn't have to talk or be like everybody else. He doesn't have to have money or a fancy upbringing or even a stable home. He just has to be what he is, a strong and coordinated kid, able to excel at just about any sport. Through athletics, he has found not only his self-esteem, but an acceptable outlet for a burning anger that he doesn't understand but knows is always there. Even with sports as an outlet, violence and fights are an everyday occurrence in a rough, testosterone-driven world. Backing down is not an option. Because of sports, the urge to win has been planted in his head like a fast-growing seed. He loves being in the thick of competition, and he has learned what it takes to win, and others are eager to follow. The seed has sprouted. He doesn't like being second best. School life is less comfortable. He is smart, though not academically motivated. He reads all of his textbooks from cover to cover the first few weeks of school and masters the material, but could care less about class or grades. Homework is turned in only if it's handy to do so. Teachers find him quietly charming, but reluctant to get involved. His writing is excellent when he bothers to do it. His test average is A+. To his 12-year-old sensibilities, being out with his buddies, playing sports with a passion, and getting through each day is what life is all about. Out there, at least in that world. Out there in that world, he is his own person, but always with an undertow from the other world, the world behind the door. Once he goes home, he enters a completely different world, and he becomes a completely different person. Cut off from his friends, his athletics, and his school life, he is withdrawn, sullen, depressed, lethargic, and emotionally detached from the rest of his family. Being the only boy, he has his own small room, and he stays in it the vast majority of his time. He has no television, not even a radio. He just stays quietly to himself and even comes and goes through his bedroom window to avoid walking through the house. Unbeknownst to his parents, he roams the streets after the family is asleep. He sleeps little as his paper route starts at 4:30 a.m. Days and nights don't seem much different when you're alone. He yearns for the hours to pass so he can make his way out into the other world, the one in which he is more functional, engaging, successful, and motivated, at least to some degree and in some areas of his life. There is an astonishing contrast between what he is like in that world out there to what he is like in this world in here. But why? Before that question is answered, let me tell you that in the many years I've worked with the parents of troubled youngsters like this one, it became quite common to hear a mother or father request that their problem child be fixed. "Get our child straight," they would demand. "We just don't know what happened. He just seemed to go downhill overnight. He's so withdrawn, so down, so depressed. What's wrong with him? Can't you do something to fix this problem?" Is this right thinking? Not even almost. No matter what maladaptive behaviors a child is exhibiting, I can guarantee you that the problem is almost certainly with the entire family, and most often, the child is just the sacrificial lamb dragged to the altar of the counselor because he or she happens to be making the most noise and has the least amount of power or ability to shift the focus to someone else. Trying to understand a child's behavior without interviewing the rest of the family just won't cut it, and any therapist worth their salt knows it. I want to be sure you know it too. So let's step through the front door with that 12-year-old boy I described earlier and observe the other five parts that would be missed if a therapist, or more importantly, you as a defensive parent, trivialized or ignored the family aspect. Life in there, life with his family unit, is tumultuous, volatile, and unpredictable. Here's the real cause for the boy's refusal to plug into his family. His father is a severe and chronic alcoholic. He is typically emotionally unavailable to the boy and to the rest of the family. He and the boy have clashed violently when alcohol takes over, and while the father barely remembers the confrontations, the experiences are seared into the boy's mind and heart. Further, the father has aborted his career in sales, uprooted the family, moved to a new state, and returned to school at a university in the hope of a brighter yet highly speculative future. Though nobly inspired, this decision hurtled this family of six into grinding poverty. There is little interconnection as each family member's own personal struggles drain them of energy. Hunger gnaws at times, and doing without is just how it is. Life is insecure as the children are the poor new kids. Life is emotionally barren, full of desperation and drama, with one crisis after another. Tired and struggling, this family is not coping well at all. Clearly scarred by the psychological and emotional stress, the boy's two older sisters try in their own way to escape the turmoil. But this turns out to be a classic case of from the frying pan into the fire. Both sisters have ill-fated elopements with boyfriends before finishing high school. Tension is everywhere in the home. The boy loves his sisters, and they have protected him and helped him in a number of ways. But then they were gone. When they returned home, they were strangely different. They weren't just the other kids in the family anymore. And so the boy feels further isolated. Although loving and caring, the mother works long and grueling hours on her feet as a store clerk just to try and keep food on the table. She is ill-equipped to deal with or counterbalance such a dominantly patriarchal family and such disconnected kids fleeing from their father's alcoholism. Baby sister is cute but silent. God only knows what she must be thinking. She is extremely dependent, afraid to leave home even to sleep over at a friend's house. She must stay close. This deal could cave any minute. The boy stays close to her, and they talk late at night. But even at a young age, he realizes the less she knows, the better. Both the mother and father were born into poor, uneducated families, and consequently, they had very little idea that life offered anything other than what they were exposed to. Tragically, the father had suffered severe mental, emotional, and physical abuse at the hands of his own mother. And this legacy crippled his relationship with his own wife and children. This is the world in which we find this 12-year-old boy. He is embedded in a family on the verge of imploding, and to evaluate him in isolation would be an exercise in futility. There is, in this world, an enveloping bleakness. Trouble runs in packs. If you haven't figured it out already, I know every detail of this story because I lived in that house. The story is my own. I was the 12-year-old boy who moved from one world to the next and back again. That was how I saw and experienced my life. That doesn't mean that my perception is correct or is how the other five members of my family would describe it. Every family member's experience and perceptions are different, but you can bet that everything each member thinks, does, or feels bears on every other person in the family. Although it isn't much fun to recall, I'm telling you this story because it's one I lived and one I can say with great confidence illustrates that family matters. Family matters because it is the single most outcome determinative factor shaping one's outlook and achievements. Your family powerfully determined what you've become and how you think about yourself, and so it will be for your own children. That's why among all the words in the English language, none means more to human beings than family. In a typical family of four, there are five distinct personalities because you must also count the collective one. Your family's collective personality is a bundle of all the personalities, subsystems, roles, and rules that exist, values embraced, the togetherness or lack of in which you live, standards and expectations, and the thoughts and beliefs you share. The collective personality of your family can either affirm or build on what you start with, or it countermands, attacks, and erodes it. If you want to understand your children, you must think of your family as a system. Whether we're talking about a family with a husband, wife, and children, a single-parent family, a blended family, a gay or lesbian family, or a multi-generational family with grandparents living in the home, a family is a system, not just a collection of individuals. If you were to look up system in the dictionary, you would see it defined as a regularly interacting or interdependent group of items forming a unified whole. To understand this concept, think of the systems at work in everyday life, even your own body, which is made up of a number of interacting parts. For example, if you rupture a disc in your lower back, you may experience what is called referred pain in your legs and even in the bottom of your feet. No part works in isolation. The function or dysfunction of even one part affects the whole. The same is true of family. In a family where the mother is diagnosed with cancer, her disease is not simply a personal problem, it's a family problem because the entire family is affected. Whenever something happens to a family member, whether it's cancer, substance abuse, an addiction, a chronic illness, or failures in life's pursuits, no family member can avoid being touched by it. These events dramatically impact a child's socialization, the ability to learn, be independent, get along with others, and understand the importance of rules. Moreover, it impacts academic progress and the building of self-esteem. Socialization is one of the most important jobs a family has. When family fails to provide the healthy nurturing children need, the impact on their lives can be destabilizing and can cheat them out of the chance to be the best person they can be. Children who are not properly socialized have problems in the world. They do not respect the authority, hierarchy, or boundaries of their parents. They have poor impulse control. They can be selfish and extremely demanding with little regard for how their behavior hurts the family. The resultant dysfunction of unsocialized children simultaneously contaminates the very family that may well have spawned their troubles. A vicious cycle, to be sure. Of course, who and what you have become is also dictated by your education and your relationships with your friends, neighbors, and employers. And as previously pointed out, a huge impact is the massive media machine. 500 TV channels, the internet, the radio, the newspapers. Yet for all that, the family, your family, remains the most powerful influencing factor. Your past experiences may make you want your family to not be such a powerful influence on who you are or who you become, but it is, whether you like it or not. Bottom line, we need to get it right, right now. As a parent, you're the head of your family and therefore occupy an unbelievably powerful role in shaping the tone, texture, mood, and quality of this interconnected and vitally important unit. You're a system manager. By successfully managing this system, you can parent your way to a phenomenal family and avoid the problems and erosion seen in so many of the families in your very own neighborhood. But let me ask you, what kind of family manager have you been up until now? Are you working on a day-to-day basis at managing your family, treating it as a project, giving it the priority it deserves? Are you creating a family environment that brings out the best in your child? Do you have the skills necessary to give your child his or her best chance at succeeding in this world? Have you overcome any family legacy that has contaminated the way in which you define and parent your family? If the other parent is in the home or active in the children's lives post-divorce, do the two of you have a parenting plan that provides guidance based on consistent values? Do you have a plan and an objective in mind for what successful parenting is and will yield in your child's life? Have you created an environment that generates feelings of safety, security, belongingness, self-confidence, and strength for the child or children in your charge? Is your family nurturing your child's individuality and acting to ensure that he or she will become the unique and authentic person God intended? I know you just answered those questions, but you may want to hit rewind and go back and listen to them over again, and this time, answer them keeping in mind that you are writing your children's future with your answers. Those questions are just the beginning of the self-examination you must be willing to do if you're going to strengthen the foundation on which your children are basing their lives. Frankly, I know that some of you listening right now are making choices and decisions that are setting your children up for disastrous failure. You may not know it, and you may not see the effects today, but trust me, you'll see them in the future if you're making the same mistakes so many well-intended parents unwittingly make. Are you one of those parents? Are you setting your child up to turn to drugs, violence, promiscuity, alcohol, or withdraw from life and all it has to offer? I intend to make it very clear to you whether your parenting practices are likely to yield unfortunate results, and if so, how to change them starting right now, this very day. If you want a healthy and nurturing family and successful and productive children, you must commit yourself to acquiring the insight and skills necessary to live the values that you know in your heart are so important. You didn't pick this audiobook up because you wanted to study up on a bunch of child development theories. You bought it because you care about your children and you want action-oriented information about how to give them their best chance for success. You picked it up because you care about your family. I've so often heard parents say, "I would die for my children." Well, I don't want you to die for your children, but I do want you to live for your children. Your role as a parent is the highest, most noble calling you will ever have in your life. What's more, I believe that you can and will rise to that challenge if given the proper knowledge and tools for this important task. I know that you already possess the most powerful and important ingredient to succeeding. That critical factor is the unconditional and heartfelt love and devotion you have for your child. But it takes much, much more than love and good intentions, because you aren't the only influence in your child's life. You must become highly aware, deeply committed, and pointedly proactive. Parents everywhere are in a major tug-of-war with a slick, false-promising, glittery, well-marketed world to determine who is going to write the script of their children's lives. Given the current state of the world, I intend to hang on to my end of the rope with both hands and play a key role in writing that script. Solid values and morality seem to have stopped being a way of life and have simply become a punchline for the jokes of the fast laners. Gone are the days when cheating in school was just some isolated case of some lazy kid copying off the smart kid. Today, over half of the students admit to cheating. Some kids are even using high-tech electronic pagers during tests and plagiarizing term papers off the internet. Where once a kid could buy illegal drugs on a street corner in the bad part of town, today he can do it on the internet from the kitchen table while you sit not 10 feet away. In a phenomenon called friends with benefits, children as young as 12 and 13 are engaging in oral sex with no more thought or consideration than you once gave to holding hands or a peck on the cheek. No relationship, no emotion, just sex. 100% of the children with access to a computer can view pornography with the click of a mouse. Our kids today are what I call an all-access past generation. It would be Pollyannish for me to suggest that it is possible to completely shield your child from all the negativity and temptation in today's world. I can't do that, and I don't think anybody else can either. But what I can do is help you add to the plus side of your child's ledger. Since you can't eliminate the bad influences, you must create deep, meaningful, and consistently positive and well-grounded experiences, values, and beliefs to counterbalance the negative. You must do it even though your children may roll their eyes and seem resistant. You must do it even though you're being pulled in a million different directions every minute of every day. That it is difficult makes it no less important and no less necessary. Bad results don't just happen in the lives of other people's kids, and that is why there is all the more reason to vow to protect your own. Raising your family is not a dress rehearsal, and it can be a 24/7 job that will last for 20-plus years, so you ought to know how to do it and do it well. As I've pointed out, what you need in addition to the love in your heart is a very specific step-by-step plan of action for leading your family and parenting with purpose. What you need is a really good guidance system so you know that you're tracking the target of success from one day to the next. You need to know how to create a phenomenal family and acquire the tools that will make that happen. Your family is worthy of everything you want for them. What you will learn here will help you. All your children will ever be, they are now becoming. Let's be honest. If you're like any parent I have ever met, you want your child to be the star in his or her own life. The soloist in the choir, the quarterback on the football team, the lead in the play, the beauty queen, the honor roll student, or the one in the best schools. Not only that, you also want your children to be happy, secure, self-assured, and confident. You want to protect your child from getting shoved in the playground, picked on by bullies, or molested by sickos, safe from failure and adversity, and from social and interpersonal pain in general. What you do with them today, when they're 2, 3, 4, 5, or even 16 years of age will determine what they do at ages 24, 34, and 44. You're raising adults. Right now, they're under construction, like a new house being built from the ground up. Once that house gets completed, it is subjected to the forces of nature and the wear and tear of life. Will its foundation crack or its roof leak? Will it hold up or will it cave in? Will your children withstand the pressures of their lives and world, or crack when the going gets tough? Is theirs a strong foundation for what is to come? The answers to those questions depend largely on how you mold and shape your children, their values, their behavior, their ability to make sound decisions on their own, how well you honor their individuality and nurture their unique gifts and talents. In short, it depends on what you do today to help them become responsible adults tomorrow. That's what the really good plan is all about. I'm sure it's no surprise coming from me, but the key to that plan is you. As in most things in life, the challenge of raising a successful family cannot and will not happen until you decide to clean house inside yourself first. The journey begins with you. You can't be one kind of person and another kind of parent. If you don't scrape away all the layers of your past pain and disappointment and self-destructive legacies and bad spirit, then no matter what else you learn about successful parenting, you'll have such low standards and poor values that you'll continue to sabotage yours, your children's, and your family's opportunities for a joyful life. I believe we all have something I call personal truth. Your personal truth is what you really believe about yourself when you're not performing and not wearing your social mask and trying to put your best foot forward. It's what you really believe about yourself when nobody is looking and nobody is listening. This personal truth is so important because I believe that we generate for ourselves and our families the results that we believe we deserve. If we do not believe that we, our family, are worthy of a phenomenal life, we will never have a phenomenal life. If you believe you're some second-class citizen, some undeserving individual, then you'll generate results that are consistent with that belief. That's why it's so important that you look first to yourself to make sure that there is not some compromised sense of worth or value that is limiting what you can create for your family. Your personal truth will be clearly reflected in what I call your attitude of approach. You probably inherited most or all of your approach, and that may not be a good thing. If, for example, you were abused, emotionally neglected, or just overindulged, those life experiences may have powerfully and boldly written on the slate of who you are, causing you to carry forward a compromised personal truth that can and will infect your children with the same things you learned. As a result, you may have a much more challenging time raising a joyful child and creating a joyful family, the very two things that should be uppermost in your priorities. Joyful children don't come to be because they were born with a joyful gene. Joyful children are taught how to live, think, interact, control their emotions, express themselves, discipline themselves, the same way they learn how to ride a bike or tie their shoes. They're taught how to be joyful. That is one of your challenges, since the ability to raise joyful children is a learned skill. When it comes to raising a family and parenting children, nobody ever really taught you the rules, let alone how to play the game. Think about it. Why are our children turning to drugs, alcohol, and sex at younger and younger ages? Because nobody has ever taught people how to parent their children in a way that keeps them from needing to turn to those escape mechanisms to feel the way they want to feel. Since you didn't get any formal child-rearing training from society, you probably relied on role models. Yet because our own parents were never trained to be effective mothers and fathers, what kind of role models could they be? In fact, I submit to you that if you've been fortunate to have parents who were positive role models, you and they can thank blind luck or even trial and error that they got it right, because it's a safe bet training had little to do with it. Simply put, this means not only that you may lack crucial information, but that the information you do have may be wrong. Sometimes, the hardest part in learning new and better skills is unlearning the old ways of doing things. I've designed Family First to meet you at whatever point you find yourself. I did not want to guess at where that was. I did not want to assume that I knew what to include in this to ensure it was absolutely bullseye responsive to your needs. Accordingly, I spent over a year designing and conducting a massive research project examining the family and parenting issues facing all of us raising children in today's world. The research project included over 17,000 respondents who generated over 1.5 million pieces of data. That data was then subjected to vigorous clinical and statistical analysis. The analysis examined such issues as the most critical problems faced by parents, parents' greatest fears, children's levels of responsivity to different parenting approaches, parents' greatest needs for assistance and information, and an overall assessment of attitudes and outlook for the future. It doesn't matter whether you have good, well-adjusted kids whom you want to see do better and become better, or, alternatively, defiant, misbehaving kids who seem headed for jail rather than college. Or maybe you have kids in crisis, a child on drugs, or a teenager who is depressed. The tools are the same, whether your child is on the honor roll or the police blotter. No matter how crazy things get or how stressed you feel, you know in your heart how fortunate you are to be given the precious, priceless treasure of children. I encourage you then to see this job of parenting as noble, as a privilege with which you've been entrusted, and to take from that responsibility a feeling of meaning and significance. Family First is not intended to be a passive experience. As you progress through it, you'll see that it's a hands-on, action-oriented program. You'll learn and put into play skills in example setting, discipline, negotiation, communications, intelligence building, strengthening child self-worth, self-confidence, behavior control, and family lifestyle management, useful not only in raising your children, but in structuring the content of your family life so that it supports and uplifts your efforts. Get these skills right, and the rest of your life as a parent will be smooth sailing. If you can bring up your children to be the confident, competent people they deserve to be, you'll have successfully fulfilled your purpose as a parent and given your children the greatest of all gifts. That's what I want for my children, and I know it's what you want for yours. It's not too late, but isn't today the day to begin? If you have a great family with great kids, then let's build on that strength. If you feel you have blown it so far, then it's time to reparent your children. Reparenting means going back to the basics and setting new goals, rules, guidelines, and boundaries. It means becoming the parent God intended when He blessed you with the gift of your children. Start by waking up every morning and asking yourself, what can I do today to make my family better? What can I do today to introduce something positive into my children's lives? What can I find that is good in each child, and how can I acknowledge it? Game on. My plan is for you and your family to be the winners.
Chapter 2. Special Strategies for Divorced and Blended Families.
For those of you who are divorced, living as a single parent, or in a blended family, I recognize that there are a lot of you out there who need a lot of answers, and you need them now. How do I play both mother and father? How much do I push and require from my children during the divorce transition? What role do I play with my stepchildren? And many more questions. The divorce rate in the United States is estimated by some statisticians to be close to 50%. What this means is that at least one out of two parents in America and their children are wrestling with significant problems and needs. Before I address the challenges your children will face if one of their biological parents is outside the home, or if you've introduced a new spouse into the family unit, I want to caution you that the majority of hurdles faced by parents in a non-traditional structure are the same as those faced by parents in a traditional structure. Kids are kids, and you shouldn't assume that because you're soloing the parenting process or parenting with a partner who's just come on board, the tools of parenting and family life are somehow different. That said, you clearly have some extra challenges to contend with, and extra challenges require extra tools. That's what this chapter is all about. I'm going to tell you what I believe is the truth about what you can and must do to create a phenomenal family, even if yours is a divorced family or a blended one. I'm going to give you a separate list of action items here because your situation expressly calls for it. Your job will be to jump into this chapter with a willingness to give it your full attention and focus consciously on the tasks presented. But you can't stop here. The actions I'll give you must ultimately fit into a bigger plan, a plan that works for all families, divorced, blended, or with both biological parents in the home. That plan is what you will find throughout this audiobook. You must commit to folding into your family life all the tools, actions, and strategies I'm going to give you as we go along. Immerse yourself in this work with a commitment of both heart and soul, and you too will emerge a winner. Even before a divorce, children have internalized parental conflict and may already be exhibiting behavior problems. So let's talk about the conditions you're likely to find in a home touched by divorce or separation. If you're a single or blended family parent, your child's life has been shaken to the core. While children respond to these kinds of events differently, watching a divorce unfold is likely to be traumatizing. Your son or daughter may experience great fear regarding the future. They may worry that the parent who's been awarded primary custody may abandon them as well. They may react with a predictable clinginess or an anger-based aggression. You must understand that if your child's mother or father has, in their view, been ripped from the home, the child may blame you for that departure. His anger will be very real, even if it's nothing more than an outward expression of hurt, fear, or frustration. Anger is often a way of coping with vulnerability. It can be a protective mechanism because if you're on the attack, getting rejected is no longer an issue. Unconsciously, the child's attitude becomes, get them before they get me. You must not personalize these reactions, but instead look past the surface and compassionately see what lies beneath. Whatever your child's outward reaction, you can bet that the departure of a parent and/or the addition of a step-parent to the family environment will provoke a major mental and emotional response. Some children will mask it, others will not. Either way, it is there. There is now and will continue to be a reaction, and your job is to manage that reaction in as constructive and rehabilitative a way as possible. Both research and my own clinical experience have taught me that your child's psychological needs are greatly increased during and after a divorce. The trauma of a fractured family leaves a residue well beyond the shorter-term shock and emotional reaction to the parent's departure. That residual reaction can be emotional, logistical, or both. When a marriage unravels, for example, financial problems are often not far behind. Money problems can create grinding hardships. There's often an unexpected, unsettling inequity between the standard of living for a divorced husband and that of his wife, a contrast that can be very confusing to a child. Statistically, more women than men are named the custodial parent, and usually it's the women who suffer the most significant drop in income. After a divorce, approximately half of all children do not see their fathers. And here's what's sad to me. Children live in the middle of this economic and emotional roller coaster and experience guilt and fear in addition to the confusion. What's more, if you're a single parent who fought hard for primary custody, You may now be faced with supervising and disciplining your children largely on your own. And it's tough. There's a natural tendency to let discipline slide. All too frequently, you're stretched too thin and your child suffers. Remarriage also brings with it an explosion of stress-inducing newness, with new stepbrothers and sisters, new rules, new demands, new religious practices. The loss of a role model can be particularly devastating as children faced with accelerating daily challenges and choices find that a custodial parent's compass is not always reliable. Each of these demands and countless others too numerous to mention are part of the reality that is divorce in today's world. Each requires a specific coping strategy. What remains constant, however, are the needs that these demands and stressors accentuate. Whatever your particular challenges may be, they all boil down to disruption for your child and can blunt their very important needs. These challenges could not come at a worse time for you since you are in emotionally rough waters yourself. You'll feel overwhelmed at times trying to deal with them. Nonetheless, you must dial into the needs of your child. According to the American Academy of Pediatrics, up to half of all children exhibit a symptomatic response during the first year after a divorce. These symptoms include irritability, increased crying, fearfulness, decreased school performance, substance abuse, depression, and aggressive and delinquent behavior. If you are consciously focused on and sensitive to your child's needs during this difficult period, you can and will do a better job of meeting them. Their most profound needs, which may last for an extended period of time, especially if ignored or mishandled, will include acceptance. This will be your children's greatest need because their self-concept is very likely in a fragile and formative stage, especially if they are at a young age. They will urgently try to gain approval and membership, since their sense of belongingness to your family has been shattered. Assurance of safety. You'll need to go beyond normal efforts to assure your children that though their family has fragmented, the protection it always provided remains solid. They must experience that their cocoon in life is intact and that you are on patrol. Actions speak louder than words, so the key will be maintaining a normal pace, boundaries, and routine in your home, preserving the same involvement in school affairs and giving your child the same access to interaction with friends. Freedom from guilt of blame for the divorce. Children often shoulder the blame for the dissolution of marriage. This feeling arises from the many accusations that erupt through the divorce and its proceedings and stems from the fact that children are the central glue that hold families together. Children personalize their part in the divorce because they know they misbehaved and they feel that they're somehow being punished for it by the breakup of their parents. Remember that when children, alone or among their peers, experience pain, they feel singled out. And in their minds, the line between pain and punishment blurs. Be conscious of this and assure your children they are blameless. Need for structure. With the loss of a family leader from the home, either the mother or the father, your children will check and test for structure. Give it to them in spades. This is the worst time to break patterns, even to indulge. Enforce discipline consistently and with the right currency for good behavior. Now more than ever, your children need to see that the world keeps spinning around, and they're still an integral part of what's going on. Need for a stable parent who has the strength to conduct business. Whether or not you feel brave and strong, you have to appear to be the best for your children. They're worried about you and about your partner, especially if there's an apparent crisis. Brave front or not, they'll pick up on the heavy emotional drain you've experienced. Still, you should do everything possible to assure them of your strength, your capacity to take care of business. In doing so, you make it possible for them to relax again. So, Show yourself to be a person of strength and resilience. Need to let kids be kids. Your children should not be given the job of healing your pain. Too often, children serve either as armor or as saviors for parents in crisis. Think about it. Don't children have a tough enough time in this world without being given the job of fixing your life? That said, there are two primary rules you must follow, especially in crisis and during times of instability in your family. Number one, do not burden your children with situations they cannot control. No one, least of all a child, should bear such a responsibility. It will promote feelings of helplessness and insecurity, causing them to question their own strengths and abilities. Number two, do not ask your children to deal with adult issues. Children are not equipped to understand adult problems. Their focus should be on navigating the various child development stages they go through. Obviously, your overall goal should be to meet all of these needs and to minimize the price your child has to pay for you and your ex being unable to sustain your relationship. I say that because it's the truth and not because I want to induce guilt. I'm not being judgmental. Only you know whether or not breaking up was the best thing for you and your children. Either way, it is what it is. The divorce has happened, and you, your ex, and your child or children are going to have to make the best of it. I'm a strong believer